Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio.
Karim viene desde el punto penal. Golazo. Otra vez. Karim Benzema. Me pongo de pie porque voy a aplaudir.
I'm standing up because I'm going to applaud, say the Tooden broadcasters, who are just like us. When Benzema pulls out an 82nd minute Panenka, all of us reduced to just standing there and clapping at our TV screens around the world. This is Rog, and you're listening to European Nights, presented by Paramount Plus, the podcast that believes penalties are better when they're Panenkas, and football is best when it reduces you to an inarticulate heap of human rubble. What a semi-final stage we witnessed last week. And thankfully, we got the back nine of the two Champions League ties still ahead to feast on this week. Liverpool travel into that magical ceramic kingdom of Villarreal on Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And Manchester City will once again gird their loins to return to the city of recent trauma, Madrid, with a one-goal margin to protect Wednesday at 3 p.m. Eastern against Real. Let us savour it all. And of course, we're joined by globe-trotting football writer and chief soccer correspondent for the New York Times, Mr. Rory Smith. Rory, did you ever work out how to get yourself from Leeds to Villarreal?
I did. It's a little bit planes, trains and automobiles, but I will be leaving tomorrow morning by, it's not in that order, by automobile to get to a plane and then get a train and then another train to Alicante, then, which is like a tourist destination on the Costa Blanca, maybe, in Spain. And I think there's lots of Costas. And then a train to Castellón, which is north of Valencia. Then another train, or maybe a taxi, from Castellón to Villarreal. It is a very, very small place. It's very hard to get to.
There are a lot of Costas, but Diego will always be my favourite. And Rory, we have so much to decode together today. Plus, you got to pack a spot and carry-on bag for your pilgrimage as soon as we hang up. So let's plummet head first, like Anthony Gordon. Remember, you can catch every single match live and on demand exclusively on Paramount Plus. New subscribers can get a 7-day free trial now by going to paramountplus.com/MIB. And to the football. Soy del Madrid del Real. Soy del Madrid del Real. El equipo más grande del fútbol mundial. Vamos, cariño, y tenemos partido. I'm from Real Madrid, the biggest team in world football. That was the music video Adidas and Real Madrid conjured for their 2019 kit launch, performed by Madrid artist DJ Denom, with lyrics all about one Karim Benzema scoring goals. Oh, it's worth looking at just for the video, where Benz lurks around in the background, looking as stoic as you can, while you're sitting on top of cars that grow increasingly expensive, draped in ever more jewellery in every single shot. Really, just an average day off for him. We must talk about his penalty, though, against Manchester City, which, Rory, he approached with the same panache as he did this music video. You know, in the arc of every Panenka, There's a moment when the ball hangs suspended in time at its apex, and it feels like it may never come down. The fate of the free world depends on backspin, trajectory, and the recovery reflex of the goalkeeper. Part of what made that Benzema penenka so bloody good is just how high he floated it. It was almost a farewell card to Ederson, a chip that said, see you next week. You, Rory, were in Manchester last Tuesday night as that ball drifted beyond the Manchester City goalkeeper. What was it like? Could you feel the collective inhale in the stadium?
There was a kind of acceptance that, yes, obviously Real Madrid were going to score a third. Yes, obviously the tie would be in the balance. The fact that it was a Panenka, I mean, get a little bit of a response. That's the only way I can describe it. That sense of delight and being impressed whilst also being incredibly disappointed that it's worked.
I love your Panenka sound effect.
Well, that's what it is. It's kind of, as you say, there is that point where you think this is going over. He's misjudged this. This is too high. And you go, oh, and then it starts to drop and you think, yeah, okay, Ederson's lying on the floor and he's scored. Sort of draws the air from the crowd. It's a strange sensation watching a high-profile, high-pressure Panenka go in.
Only Karim Benzema would have that confidence, though. You know, a gent who had actually missed two penalties in his previous club game and still think, yep, I think it's time to pull the Panenka out of my songbook. And thus, yet another Real Madrid game defined by Luka Modric and Karim Benzema at their combined 70 years of age. It's honestly incredible watching them charge tirelessly around the pitch. They are among the first generation of players whose careers have been shaped by sports science, their diets, their lifestyles, expertly crafted to prolong their time at the top. But to me, Rory, it's still fairly unfathomable just how it is physically possible that those two can run this hard at this stage of the season when they've already played like 38, 40 games. How do you understand this level of advanced age indefatigability?
So I think there's probably three things, and none of them are actually just the sort of innate, personal, bespoke miracle of Benzema and Modric. That, you know, you have to give them a little bit of credit that Modric, particularly at 36 in midfield, he actually spends energy quite cleverly. He's not always... There's no brainless running from Luka Modric, and he does have periods of rest within games. But broadly, there is the fact that Real have been able to kind of shape their season to protect certain players. So Modric and Benzema have had chances to rest. They've had lower wattage periods of their season, which has really helped. The second one is that I think City's youth is maybe offset a little bit just by how intense this stage of their season is. That they have had, over the last few weeks, several very intense games, a couple of them against Liverpool, that seem to have taken it out of them. There have been a couple of injuries, which means the workload on everybody else increases, which is a problem for them. And that maybe just dulls the advantage that they have through not being quite as old as Real Madrid. They also have quite a small squad for such a rich team, Manchester City. They're down to sort of 17, 18 senior players with a couple of very promising kids thrown in at the end. That's a conscious choice from City. That's the route Guardiola's chosen to go down. It's not a disadvantage. It's just how they've chosen to run it. But the third thing that I think is the most interesting is I do wonder whether what we conceive of as old in football isn't really old anymore. Because, as you say, because of sports science, because of advancements in nutrition, because of advancements in the way that players are trained, because of the way that their bodies are looked after at most clubs, when you go in the morning, they will now give you a saliva test and sometimes a blood test to see kind of how hydrated you are, how you've slept, and they will then tailor your training program accordingly. That's all stuff that players even 10, 15 years ago, the Drogba generation, they didn't have that. When you consider that we kind of have decided collectively that old for a footballer starts at 33, 34 maybe, without sports science, when you throw in the full advancements that we have now, maybe 34 just isn't that old anymore.
I have never felt more convinced that my debut for the US men's national team lies ahead of me, not behind me. But the first leg, Rory, oh my God, that first leg. The more Manchester City exerted control, the more Real Madrid seemed confident they could undermine it. It was like watching possibly the highest level schoolyard football match of all time. Last goal wins. Okay, now last goal wins. Okay, now last goal wins. And it ended 4-3. Real Madrid took every single haymaker City could land, only to rise from the dead harder and faster. And you wrote in the wake of the final whistle, There's no data point, no vignette, no piece of analysis that will adequately explain how Manchester City could beat Ancelotti's team so comprehensively and yet leave with the tie poised so delicately. So instead of data, let's do what I always prefer to do, Rory, and lean on some broad generalisations. First off, the goals. KDB, Jesus, Foden, Bernardo Silva all carved Real Madrid's defence apart like master butchers attacking the centre of the steer. Madrid strikes, infinitely less choreographed. Yet another piece of Benzema virtuosity. Vinicius ran the length of the pitch after whipping off Fernandinho's underpants and making him look very, very 36 years old. And of course, that late penalty sloppily conceded. When you look at these goals, the difference between them, what does it tell you about these two teams and the extreme contrasting qualities they possess?
Well, they are. That's exactly it. They are two different visions of what works in football, of what elite football should be. So Manchester City are about system and organisation and collective endeavour. That's what Guardiola wants. It's choreographed movements. It's ideas that have been forged in training, that have been practiced again and again and again until they're second nature. With Real Madrid, there's a little bit more improvisation, basically. It's what Eduardo Galeano, the great Uruguayan writer, used to call heroic football.
My mate.
Your mate. And Galeano had this concept of heroic football that was, and to him, I suspect he would have really hated Manchester City, to be perfectly honest, and Liverpool. He would not have enjoyed either of those teams at all.
Proper Everton.
He would have found very little to enjoy at Everton. But Galeano was very much of the mind that football was about giving genius the chance to express itself. That's what everything was for. That you kind of went to the stadium hoping to see someone do something imaginative and special. And Real Madrid have that struck to their core, to be honest. That is how this team, this squad, plays football. That they will take whatever you can throw at them. They will refuse to go away, and they will rely on the fact that ultimately they are more talented than you. And there is a strangeness to the fact that City are so clearly a better team than Real Madrid, that they are so vastly superior as a unit, as a sort of organised force. But if you go through it 1-11, which is very old-fashioned, is the sort of thing that we shouldn't do anymore, there's not that much between them, because Real Madrid's players are all incredibly gifted and hugely experienced and massively talented. And Real basically rely on that. They are of the view that you can have your system, you can have your approach, your philosophy, your vision, but deep down football is about how good we all are at this sport, and we think we are better at it than you are.
Eduardo Galeano's interviewing him was one of the thrills of my lifetime. And his famous line is that Maradona played as if the ball was stuck to his foot. Messi played as if the ball was actually placed inside his boot. God knows how we'd have to update that upon first glimpsing Anthony Gordon. But we've noted, when it comes to Real Madrid, the cocktail of players, tactics, comebacks and intangibles have made their part of the semi-finals this season. Probably the most dramatic Champions League run by some stretch. But among the trail of emotional wreckage Real have left in their wake, one gent has remained completely unmoved, barring that creaking drawbridge of a brow above his left eye, Mr. Carlo Ancelotti. As much as it pains me, in the deeply traumatised state in which I am to be found, we have to talk about the Italian managing icon, my once beloved Mr. Carlo, a man who, did this really happen, coached Everton for 18 months, most memorably stoically blowing on a hot cup of coffee as a reaction to Tiny Bernard scoring an extra time wonder goal. And that surreal Everton bottle episode aside, Ancelotti's LinkedIn is really a list of one superpower club after another, because the man is really the consummate CEO for mega clubs in need of a steadying presence, which is why in his team's most dramatic, feverish moments, Carlo so desperately chooses to disappear into the background like Homer Simpson into a bush. His style of management and tactics is truly distinct from his opposite number, Pep Guardiola. He's not an ideologue. He's not a devotee to a system. Rather, a man who tailors his approach at any given club to the facets of his surroundings. The ultimate discreet coaching power broker, an ability which has seen him tie the Champions League most winningest coach ever, 3 titles. Ancelotti, he's actually a model graduate of the school known as Coverciano, the leading coaching centre in Italy, which has produced the likes of Allegri, Antonio Conte, Ranieri and more. Rory, Can you briefly explain what it is and how it shaped Carlo as the ultimate tactical polyglot?
Troveciano is where Italy trains its coaches, and they have a world-leading program, really, of developing young coaches. It's the one area of the Italian game that continues to fire. Allegri, obviously, has had huge success at Juventus, Antonio Conte. Vast numbers of coaches in Serie A remain Italian. There's not that many foreign coaches in Serie A, which is relatively unique. But Ancelotti's probably a star graduate of the current generation. And what Troveciano, I guess, teaches people more than anything is that there isn't one way to play football, that there are lots and lots of different things that you need to do. It's very much a coaching culture, that the idea is that you go in, and bear in mind, if you look at Serie A, this tends to be how most coaches in Italy will understand life, that you go in, you're thrown in, probably in November, midway through a season, to an impossible job, and you're expected to succeed immediately with what you have at hand. And so I think Italy does generally produce quite flexible, quite versatile coaches who are used to saying, okay, I can't do this here. I want to play ultra-defensive football or ultra-attacking football, but I can't do that with what I have in my squad at this moment, so I will find a way. I will trust my ability, my education, to find the fine details that allow us to succeed. And I think Ancelotti is extremely good at that and has always been good at that. But I think his real skill is probably something that's relatively unique to him, that he possesses more than Max Allegri, more than Conte. And that's simultaneously his ability to manage a squad, particularly a squad full of stars, and to manage upwards, which is a crucial thing in management that we don't think about enough. And the reason Ancelotti's so good at it is because his first employer as a coach, or certainly his first high-profile employer as a coach, was Silvio Berlusconi. And Silvio Berlusconi liked to get involved in a lot of ways with a lot of different things, but particularly with who should be in AC Milan's team. And that's where Ancelotti kind of cut his teeth as a manager after leaving Parma, which is kind of his hometown club. He went back to Milan where he'd been a player, and he knew already that Berlusconi liked to be involved, that he had to countenance the idea that every day, certainly, there would be a call from Silvio asking how someone was training or whether such and such would be in the team. He'd seen that as a player. And as a coach, he understood pretty quickly that the key to longevity at Milan, and by longevity, maybe authority, was to know how to deal with Silvio. And I think Ancelotti's the sort of person who finds that relatively easy. I think he's very laid back. He's very phlegmatic. He's kind of aware that he's going to get sacked and you probably shouldn't take it too seriously. That's always been the vibe I've got from Ancelotti. But I think it comes from working at Milan when Milan was very much the archetypal super club. It's something he took with him everywhere else in his career. So if you look at all the clubs he's worked at, they've all followed that pattern. They've had a squad full of stars. He had that at Milan. And they've had someone at the top whose ego you need to massage. And Carlo is brilliant at that.
So that is what has created the flexibility and reliability that really is a huge part of the Carlo appeal and has kept him constantly the relevant option for massive clubs, chock full of huge personalities and even bigger wage bills. And for Real, after an off year under Zidane, they brought him back in and he settled the choppy waters. He's just wrapped up Real's La Liga title with enough breathing room to pose on that open top bus with shades on and a cigar in his gob like Jay-Z on the cover of The Blueprint. But the title was one with, let's say, perhaps a lack of a distinct vision beyond that of Modric or Vinicius Jr. to Benzema connection. And also the early signs of that tactically adept scruff Xavi rebuilding Barca's challenge ahead of schedule have created a certain kind of panic, a certain speculation regarding the security of Ancelotti's ongoing job. Real Madrid, we have to say, do business in a singular distinct way. And for them, the league title is rarely enough. Late drama after late drama in the Champions League doesn't mean a lot unless a 14th European trophy is raised at the end of it all. And Rory, to what extent do you think amidst the thrills, spills and panenkas of this Real tournament run, Ancelotti's proving that he's still the gent best suited to facilitate success for the current iteration of Real Madrid?
Ancelotti doesn't get the credit he deserves a lot of the time for being tactically adept. He isn't just an arm round the shoulder, Luca, you're great, go out and express yourself merchant. And even if he was, there's far more skill to that than we maybe realise. Is there a more useful skill for a manager to have than instinctively understanding how to balance a team? I'm not sure there is. Ancelotti has some of that, but he's also capable of tweaking games to shape them to his will. And the best example of that, certainly in this Champions League run, was using Fede Valverde as a right winger against Chelsea, which gave Real Madrid this incredible energy on the right that unbalanced Chelsea, forced them to confront something that they weren't expecting, and it reinforced Real's midfield. So he is a smart manager. The issue with Real for me is that I don't think long-term, hoping that individual genius and someone who is basically in charge of facilitating that individual genius will enable you to compete with the teams that are built to function with one purpose. I think the era of the political and the chaotic clubs is probably coming to an over. The Real prove that point wrong basically every year. They make no sense. But at some point, I do think Real Madrid will have to have a look and say, okay, we need a proper structure here. So I am confident that in 2 or 3 years' time, I'll be sitting here saying, Real Madrid's plan is not going to work in the long term, and that they will have won at least one Champions League before that.
It's got to be more than just Anthony Gordon feeding it to Mbappe. Real Madrid thus far have been a team of moments, special, special moments. Against Manchester City, they're also a team whose experience shone through, and I did love Carlo Ancelotti's description of the human emotions that propel these critical moments. He said, it's very special not to lose your heads. That's a characteristic of this team. We've seen it so many times. The shoulders never drop. The heads remain cold. The second leg of this match kicks off at 3 p.m. Eastern Wednesday on Paramount Plus. We will be covering it live on Twitch at twitch.tv/meninblazers with a slew of guests, including the NBA's Josh Hart, Literature's John Green, and I believe Brendan Hunt from Ted Lasso. I love that man so much. And we'll be back to talk about the other Champions League semi-final after a quick break.
Paramount Plus is your choice for championship soccer. Streaming the best teams and biggest stars from around the world.
Giant stars, huge action.
From UEFA Champions League.
A Messi tour de force.
Serie A, NWSL, and the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers. Plus the best action from South America and Asia.
Oh my word, what a goal.
So how do you choose from so many champions? You don't have to. This is the best of CBS Sports. Streaming on Paramount Plus.
There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
Liverpool, we're never gonna stop. An original released by the 1983 Liverpool squad this season. They won their fourth Champions League trophy and the last for two decades. So it behooves me to say they kind of did stop. And it was glorious. This week, the quadruple hunters roll into Estadio della Ceramica, hoping to qualify for their third Champions League final in 5 years. Incredible. After defusing Villarreal's lowest of low blocks to win 2-0 at Anfield last week, at the final whistle there, Jurgen Klopp opted against his signature fist pumps in front of the Kop. the message clear. There are still 90 minutes left to play. I looked at that and thought, my God, that speaks to a change that we've witnessed over the years at Anfield, a maturation of Klopp in his squad. In 2018, they stormed to the Champions League final against those heels of Real Madrid. They were like a race car that had sacrificed safety features for a four-stroke V6 engine. They roared, they overwhelmed teams with their speed of play, but struggled to regain balance when rocked by the shithousing experience of that 2018 Ramos-led Real side. The trophy-winning team 2019 that swatted Spurs in the final, they had a more refined element of control, but remained a team powered by almighty emotion. This season, though, there's a different quality to Liverpool, a measured, patient characteristic that we saw in their methodical unlocking of Villarreal. And no player embodies the composure, the rhythm that Liverpool have added, like Thiago in their midfield, a gent who's been at the very top of his game in this run-in, a player who affects the field like no others. You wrote about him, Rory. You said boiling a player like Thiago down to his yield, this many passes completed, this many interceptions, this volume of wheat harvested, it's like describing a sunset by listing Pantone numbers. He is the kind of player that Liverpool haven't had, maybe ever. I mean, to you, Rory, what does Thiago represent about this larger Liverpool team that makes it different from previous iterations?
Fans of a certain vintage who might suggest Jan Molby would have been someone similar. But I've got to say, I've not seen, and I'm nearly 40, very nearly 40, it's very upsetting, although I'm hoping that age isn't what it used to be, so sports science will get me through.
Zlatan could be your dad.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen a player like Thiago in England before. Not that he's the best player I've ever seen in England, as he isn't. But in terms of the way that he plays, there is something very foreign about him. And I mean that as the highest possible compliment. I guess Fabregas maybe would be in there, or David Silva. But then Thiago plays certainly further back than Silva. And Fabregas was a very English-style player. Thiago has a kind of elan about everything he does, a composure, the way he shapes his foot, the way he shapes his body, the way he kind of varies the rhythm and the tempo of a game, the fact that every single pass he plays does something is really kind of jaw-dropping to watch. And watching him do it when he's in the sort of form that he is at the moment is watching a master at work, and there is a real pleasure to that. And it does sum up where Liverpool have come from and where they're going to, or where they have come to. Because as you say, in 2018, they were chaos. Their chaos was their strength. And by 2019, they toned it down a bit. They'd harnessed it a little bit. But that kind of idea of heavy metal football, which I think must be the three words that Jurgen Klopp regrets more than any other, it still held true a little bit that when Liverpool needed to be heavy metal, they could be. I think now they're a symphony or an orchestra. They're actually a lot more like Manchester City than maybe we realise. They play a very controlled, very calm, very deliberate style. The first leg against Villarreal was the best example of that. They got to 2-0 after about an hour. The old Liverpool would have thought, right, we storm ahead, we go and get three or four, and if we concede one or two, not a problem. We're going to go and outscore this team. This Liverpool basically stopped. They thought, do you know what, we'll have a little go occasionally, but for the most part, we've got two goals. We're quite happy to sit back on that. We'll conserve energy. And that is a very mature decision. And I think that probably means they're more complete.
The other Sandinga dancer in this semi-final tango is Villarreal. And while right now it's hard to see them coming back from this deficit, we have to remember football always has a tendency to make fools out of all of us. And Unai Emery said as much himself after the game last week. They have not felt any threat today, but we know we can create problems for them over there. That's our aim. We are here in the semi-final with a smile on our face. We've still got a chance. We're going to do our own thing and see what we can do. And Rory, you wrote about how the unfashionable underdogs have arrived here. A squad built on second chances and roads less travelled. Really an example of how you can compete with the team seated at the big table of European football. Last week, the Villarreal fans showed up en masse to Anfield. I found it really beautiful, but you could really feel the conscious attempt to savour every second as they flooded the streets of Liverpool with their yellow scarves to belt out their songs. Those fans' spirits never wavered, but their team football, gotta say, fairly dour to watch. And when we think of Spanish football in our imaginations, we still think of peak Barcelona. We think of flowing, purist football. But it is fascinating that the two most defensive teams left in the Champions League are the ones from La Liga. And you tweeted, the financial gap makes that understandable. But it does kind of illustrate where La Liga stands now. So La Liga is what right now, Rory?
Well, I think it's in the throes of change is maybe the best way of putting it. There are obviously Real Madrid are not a defensive team. Real Madrid are a team that defies description, really. I'm not quite sure what Real Madrid are. I'm not sure Real Madrid are entirely sure what Real Madrid are. But Villarreal and Atletico Madrid have both illustrated where Spanish football stands at this point, that they are, in terms of personnel, behind the elite of England, which is no bad thing, and obviously the financial situation makes it clear why that is. I think that what's happened is probably as a kind of boiled down, concentrated theory that I'm sure will not hold water. There was that dominant stall of Barcelona, which naturally led more teams to play a slightly more defensive style when confronted with it, because that's the only way you can deal with it. Those coaches then got chances. They stuck with the methods that allowed them to get those jobs in the first place, that allowed them to achieve results. And so what you have now is, below Real Madrid and away from Barcelona, you probably have a dominant style that is a little bit more reactive. I don't know if it's more defensive, but it's more reactive. Although Diem Balaguer, the Spanish football journalist, when I tweeted that, did point out that there are signs that Spain is trying to change, that there are coaches in La Liga trying to introduce a more kind of high-tempo, high-octane approach. And the problem they have is that the players have all come through an academy system where that is not how they play. The broader thing, I think, I'm not sure that Spain will achieve the same results as it has in European football over the last sort of 10 years if it doesn't travel a little bit further down the line to meet the rest of Europe where they are.
Tune in to that second leg. Villarreal versus Liverpool, Tuesday, 3 p.m. Eastern time. Vamos, Submarino, live on demand on Paramount+. Coming up next, we're talking about the Europa League after a quick break.
Paramount Plus is your choice for championship soccer. Streaming the best teams and biggest stars from around the world.
Giant stars, huge action.
From UEFA Champions League.
A Messi tour de force.
Serie A, NWSL, and the CONCACAF World Cup qualifiers.
For the save!
Plus the best action from South America and Asia.
Oh my word, what a goal!
So how do you choose from so many champions? You don't have to. This is the best of CBS Sports. Streaming on Paramount+.
It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48-ounce cold brew products, something for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favourites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this, as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend, have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage. Once Leipzig, always Leipzig. Hey, hey! Although, if you listen to our third episode on that Red Bull project, you know it's a bit of a stretch for a club that was only founded back in 2009. But I digress. RB Leipzig felled Rangers 1-0 in the first leg at the Red Bull Arena, with my mate Tyler Adams starting. The Scottish side defended with muscle, not giving up so much as a corner until the 85th minute, but it was unfortunately from that very 85th minute set piece that a clearance dropped out of the sky and met Angelino's left boot. Leipzig now travel to Ibrox this Thursday with a one-goal lead to defend against ever-plucky Rangers. And last week, We also spoke about the other German semi-finalist in the Europa League, Eintracht Frankfurt, a team who will draw broad German support if they make the final, given their historical presence in the country, even more so if they were to face off against Leipzig, who are, let's just say, much less a champion of the people. All the while, they continue to establish themselves as a long-term power in European football. What contrast do you see between these two German clubs, and what truths can we take from them?
Yeah, Frankfurt are one of three or four teams that are probably the direct opposite of Leipzig, that they not only stand for everything that Leipzig has deemed to be a threat towards, but they are seen as the teams that are suffering because of Leipzig, and to an extent the other two teams in the Bundesliga who aren't really subject to the 50+1 rule that means that fans own the majority control of their teams. Bayer Leverkusen and Wolfsburg are both Wirtschaft teams. They're teams that were formed by companies and are kind of given an exemption, but it's seen as almost an honourable exemption because they are at least historical. Leipzig are, as you know, much newer. Teams like Frankfurt, Cologne, Stuttgart, Werder Bremen, Schalke maybe, they're the sides that are deemed to have suffered because of Leipzig, because of Leverkusen, because of Wolfsburg. They're the big popular clubs with huge organic support owned by their members, the standard bearers for 50+1. So were we to get a Leipzig-Frankfurt Europa League final, you would effectively have a clash of two visions for how German football should be. And I think that would make it fascinating. It would, to an extent, be the clash of a sort of upper mid-table Bundesliga team against a German team concerned with qualifying for the Champions League. But at heart, it's a game between two different kind of ideas of what football should be about. Is it about fan ownership and democracy, or is it about dynamism and success and ideas and selling energy drinks?
Energy drinks. The Europa League semi-finals rumble on Thursday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Paramount Plus. In that other match, Frankfurt currently hold a 2-1 lead over West Ham. Sadly, Jared Bowen learned that you don't get points for a bicycle that only almost went in. And in the Conference League, we saw the hipster's choice for the most exciting European semi-final of last week. Feyenoord 3, Marseille 2. The difference being a goal 10 seconds after second half kickoff. Marseille centre-back Souley Tassar sold his keeper incredibly short on a back pass, but it was 90 minutes of magically entertaining football. Keep your eyes on that second leg as they both fight for the right to play in Albania. Roma and Leicester shared a 1-1 draw, but as we predicted, the action was on the sidelines between Jose Mourinho and Brendan Rodgers, who, fun fact, share a birthday, January 26. Aquarius dominating the star signs for managers with a bloated sense of self-importance. But also, as Jose Mourinho interrupted Rodgers' post-match press conference to reveal, the two men shared a very expensive drink together.
And get the result to send you to your first ever European final.
Yeah, I think
he gave me the best wine in the market.
It cost a lot of money.
A revelation that instantly, for me, became one of the top 10 moments in the Europa Conference League's long and vaunted history. Talking of libations and culinary wonder, Rory, before we wrap up today, if you and I were off to Glasgow together, and my God, I look forward to that day, and you wanted to treat me, Rog, on a budget marginally smaller than Brendan Rodgers' wine per diem, where would we be going?
So, I love Glasgow. My brother was at university in Glasgow. It's a brilliant city.
Brilliant.
I've got a lot of family and stuff in Scotland. Spent a lot of childhood holidays in Scotland.
Very
fond of the Scots.
So I jealous.
Did.
Where?
Yeah. Mainly in Dumfriesshire, which is the southwest. Yeah, that's right. Southwest corner of Scotland. The bit that sticks out towards Northern Ireland as though inviting it to a party.
Some of my happiest days have been on the Isle of Skye.
We had our honeymoon on Skye. It's
you
a lovely
did.
Place. Yeah.
Oh, mate. Skye. I once hitchhiked up there and slept in the Talisker Distillery in a tent for about 10 days.
Yeah, yeah. It's all done very Michelin-starred now, as Skye.
You've just ruined Skye for me, Smith.
It's all done very Michelin-starred now. You wouldn't be allowed to sleep in a tent. You'd have to pay a lot of money for accommodation. So we would go to a little Vietnamese place that I know. There's a theme developing to these meals. I do apologise. Called Non Viet, which is on Sotty Hall Street. Right slap bang in the middle of Glasgow. Delicious Vietnamese food. up there with the Vietnamese, in fact, better than the Vietnamese food available in Manchester. So good that I'm actually getting quite hungry thinking about it, even though we're recording this way past my dinner time. But I remember going, I think when I was there for a... I think I went to do a story on Celtic and Rangers, which is the sort of thing you should never do as a journalist, because it can only lead to trouble. But I was there on my own, and I was staying in the centre of town, and I thought, right, I'll see where on Google looks good. There was a Vietnamese place nearby. I thought, that will do. And it turned out to be one of the best Vietnamese places I've been to in Britain. And it was Non Viet, so I'd take you there.
God, Rory Smith, like the Benzema of food, he don't miss. And I can't think of a better way to brave a drizzly overcast Glasgow day than with a bowl of Boonbo Whey. I do wonder how you say that in Scottish. Maybe some stir-fried tilapia in Non Viet secret tomato sauce. Are you not a haggis man, Rory?
I love haggis. Love haggis.
Love me a bit of haggis. Love me a bit of venison haggis at the ubiquitous chip, a Glasgow classic on Ashton Lane. Though I've read about a newer place, the Republic Beer Hall in the city centre, which reportedly makes a haggis pizza, which I believe takes the pineapple on pizza long-running debate and turns it up to 11.
You certainly wouldn't have haggis and pineapple.
This is definitely turning into a culinary podcast with a tiny bit of football attached. Before it turns into that, Rory, let me say, you have enriched our minds this week. Now you're just making me hungry. Godspeed to you, Rory Smith, as you go on that odyssey of which Greek epics will be written. Rory Smith, on the way to Villarreal.
Well, I've just had an email, actually, from the people who I'm flying with. Due to ongoing issues caused by airport security queues, please allow plenty of time for your journey through the terminal. That doesn't sound positive.
I don't think we respect the sacrifice Rory Smith makes to expense Vietnamese meals all around the world. That's all for today. We'll be back later in May to begin to talk through the finalists in our competitions. Last word for me. Come on, Villarreal. To them I say, Coraje. Ready for some football. Hey Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.